You want to launch a book, but not one that gets 2 reviews and is forgotten the next day. So how do you do it in a way that changes your career and your life? That's what I'm here to tell you. Welcome to Launch Your Book with Anna David. Hi there. Welcome to Launch Your Book with Anna David. I'm your host, Anna David. We talk about launching books. And in this episode, I'm going to be honest. I recorded this episode before the most recent name change of the podcast. Previous name was Build Your Business with a Book. So we talk a lot about that. But now the podcast is called Launch Your Book. And I am so excited to bring you this episode today. It is with the one and only Jess Leahy. Now, she's a brilliant lady. She's a former New York Times columnist, contributes to The Atlantic. She's got a podcast. She's also the New York Times bestselling author of The Gift of Failure. And her new book, The Addiction Inoculation, is the one she was meant to write. Here's why. Sober woman, reporter, and has taught high schoolers in recovery. Plus, she's married to this brilliant doctor who helped her with a lot of the scientific and medical knowledge. And it is basically a book for parents who would like to inoculate their kids against addiction. So it's super interesting to me on a number of levels. And she is super interesting to me on a number of levels. In this episode, this woman is a go-getter. She talks about how she gets speaking gigs and how she gets celebrity endorsements and how she gets on big podcasts. And it really makes you feel lazy, frankly. But she walks you through exactly how to do it. So I hope you love this episode. I think you will learn a lot. If you would like the show notes for it, where you can get links to her book and more information about her and all these awesome ideas she shares, just go to launchpadpub.com/blog/Jess. And here we go with Jess Leahy. Well, hi there.
Well, hello there.
You know what's funny? I just asked you if you prefer Jessica or Jess, and I didn't listen to your answer.
Happens all the time. I actually had to admit that to my kid last night. I was nodding or something. And then I said, I'm sorry, I haven't been listening for the past like 2 minutes. So I have no idea what we're talking about. It's Jess.
Fantastic. It takes a big person, I think, to admit that. I do it all the time. Sorry, I'm already segueing with neighbors when I move into a new place.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
You do that?
Well, because you're so nervous, you can't hear in the first place.
Well, and are you ever just sitting there thinking, God, I'm such a good neighbor. And you're thinking about what a good neighbor you are and not what their answer is.
I do a lot of thinking about something else when I'm supposed to be thinking about what's happening right in front of me. My husband is upstairs. If you'd like me to bring him down, I'm sure he could tell you all about it.
Well, you know, that's what happens when you're a thinker. Am I right?
I also just, I'm hyper and I just have a lot of stuff that I need to be doing. And sometimes it's not like profound things. It's the fact that, you know, I really should strip the sheets on my bed and, you know, yeah, it's a little embarrassing sometimes.
Well, it does. I will say go with alcoholism. Does mm-hmm. it not? The busy, yeah. busy mind that is frankly quite good at multitasking. That's what I think. So this is why you're my perfect guest, because this is a Excellent. Podcast that has, maybe I should wait till the end to say that, but I'm just going to be optimistic. This is a podcast that 3 years ago was a podcast about recovery and yeah. has slowly transitioned into being a podcast about books. And here you are with the newest book about, not just the newest book about recovery, but the book that has been, we have all been waiting for.
Well, and to be very, very clear, my book is the early versions of the book I envisioned were definitely about, you know, it's about kids. So I did envision that it was going to be about recovery. And then I had to pull back and say, that's not where my expertise lies. I mean, yes, I have taught in a drug and alcohol rehab for kids, for adolescents for 5 years, but prevention is really what I was most interested in. So the book is prevention, prevention, prevention. And if you're looking for someone to handle, you know, like, when is it time for, you know, a rehab? When is it time? Blah, blah, blah. Then there are lots of other wonderful books about that. But my book is all about prevention.
That being said,
But I also talk about my own recovery.
So, you talk about your own recovery, and recovery is addiction is one of those wily things where there aren't clear answers, which is in book. And we were talking about it before we started recording. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about your, well, first of all, let's talk about your career. Teacher, journalist, author. Was this always part of the podcaster? Is this always part of the trajectory, the plan?
You know, when you have that, like, I'm 50 now. So if you have that, like, bird's eye view of your life, you can say, oh yeah, a lot of what I was doing was teaching, but it wasn't in a formal teacher sense. And then when I finally got the opportunity, I was actually in law school when I became a teacher. I was going to be working in juvenile court. I had a job all lined up. I was, you know, that's what I was going to do. I was asked to start teaching, to teach a class over the summer. And I was hook, line, and sinker, fully in. I knew it. My husband knew it. He even joked, you know, are you even going to finish law school? Because it's so obvious you're a teacher. So I did finish, but I went straight into teaching. And I had written a book. My first book, like most authors, is the one that's in the drawer. Like, I sold pieces of it as essays. So I did sell little bits and pieces of it, but never got published. And I said to my husband, you know, I don't know what I'm going to write about next. Like, I'm tapped out. I don't know what's next. And he said, well, teaching really lights you up. So you should write about that. And I was like, who? No one wants to read about teaching. And I wrote about it anyway. And I was very happy to find out that there's a huge need to hear more about what's happening in the classroom. And that sort of became more, it started moving away from teaching and more into education. And I found myself with a column at the New York Times talking about the intersection of education and parenting called the Parent Teacher Conference. So plan. No, I've had a very rambling, I've done a lot of different things, but I somehow wonderfully landed at this intersection of education and parenting. And then, thank goodness, I got sober and recovery and prevention became, you know, sort of one of those things I had to think about just from my own children's perspective. You know, I have two kids who have a genetic predisposition, and what do I do with that? And I essentially get to write the books that I want and can't find. And so that's what I did. And that this book was many years in the making. And, you know, I had to do a lot of research before I could get there. But this has been an incredible experience for me. And the podcasting thing came out of, you know, just loving to talk about books and loving to talk about the process of being a writer and having my two best friends be bestselling authors. So that worked out nicely for us, I think. And so we've had a podcast for what, 4 years now, just talking about the life of writing and how it works and interviewing amazing authors. It's really a fun gig. I scored.
You scored. And I want to unpack. There were so many things that will be interesting to listeners. Okay. So the first thing, and somehow I found myself with a column at the New York Times, since we all know that's not something that just somehow happens. Let's talk about how that happened.
How that happened was before I ever wrote. So I wrote a blog, a teacher blog. Lots of teachers do it. It's great because we can see what each other are doing in our classrooms. I wrote on my blog, and a New York Times editor saw it. I wrote about the fact that all of my students kept failing a quiz and I was getting pissed off at them and not analyzing what I was doing wrong. So there was an article about me in the New York Times. And then that relationship with that editor grew, and she took over for the Motherload blog at the New York Times. And this parent teacher conference was an idea that we sort of came up with together. And I did that for 3 years, and I loved it. I loved it, loved it. And then at the end of 3 years, I'm like, yeah, I think I've answered all the questions that, you know, I'm done now. But that was really fun. It was every other week for 3 years.
And you were the one who said no longer. Is it a big, that's a big thing to say that to the New York Times.
Yeah, part of it was that the Motherload blog had been subsumed by Well. And I loved working with Well. It was just different editors. Also, I really wanted to leave while I felt good about what I was doing. I didn't want to get to the point where there's that episode of Sex and the City where Sarah Jessica Parker's character is like, is this a thing? Can I write about socks? Is there anything there? And right. I didn't want to get to that point. I wanted to answer questions that parents really wanted answered and teachers really wanted answered. And I didn't want to start resorting to socks. Is that a thing? So I felt really good about that.
Yeah. You didn't want to jump the shark in print. Now, was it a big deal when a New York Times editor saw your blog? Was this a blog that was widely read? Was this a shock to get the email? Because a lot of bloggers out there dream of something like that happening.
Yeah, no, this is what was really interesting about the blog is that I think it was like my mom, my dad, a couple of friends, probably the parents of my students, which was horrifying. We're reading it. It was so few. It was like 26 subscribers or something. And some people in education found it somehow. I don't know how. And then it sort of, you know, I started writing for other outfits for free, mostly. Yeah, for free. And then those blogs had bigger audiences than mine. So there was that whole like sharing our work kind of thing on a non-exclusive basis. So there were things that like I could put on my blog. And then I could also, there was a editor named Robert Pondicio, who's now with the Fordham Institute. He was writing for the Core Knowledge Foundation and he had his readership was really amazing. And so it was little incremental things like that. Mm-hmm. Plus, then I finally wrote an article that was more than a blog post. And I knew because it was based on a study and I kind of knew this was bigger than just a blog post. And so I put feelers out, got the name of an Atlantic editor. And that was my first Atlantic piece. And it's sort of a, you know, it was a bit of a fairy tale because it was my first piece at the Atlantic. It went viral. It was called Why Parents Need to Let Their Children Fail. Mm-hmm. And then we had a 14 publisher auction for that book based on that article. But at the same time, you know, capitalizing on that every single step of the way, every single time I had an article that I thought was radio worthy, TV worthy, I was pitching my work, like, are your listeners possibly interested in me talking about this? And so every single time I had an article come out, my routine was then 2 hours of pitching individual producers for all of the places where I'd started building relationships. Because if you're a writer at The Atlantic and you're going on, you know, the Today Show to talk about the thing you talked about in this article in The Atlantic, then people are seeing you as an expert on X. And that builds on itself. And then you start to build a reel and then your reel, you know, people like to depend on the same sort of quote unquote experts over and over and over again. And so that became a really important part of what I was doing, the media outreach.
Yes, I will say the TV thing is they sort of audition you one. Let's say once they're like, she can form great sentences. She doesn't freeze this. And people don't get that. You just get into their roster. And
And it was a trial by fire for me because the article that The Gift of Failure sort of grew out of, it came out, it went viral. I did Fox. I did a bunch of local stuff. I can't remember if I did the Today Show then. Anyway, I did a bunch of media right off the bat and I didn't know what I was doing. Luckily, I had a friend who could give me a few pointers, but I had no idea what I was doing. So if you look at my reel, you can see what the earliest stuff is because, you know, all I knew at that point was lean forward. That was like my, you know, lean forward and look like you're really sort of into the, but that was sort of, it was very much a trial by fire. So by the time The Gift of Failure came out, not only did I have all these relationships with producers where I'd gone over and over and over again with my Atlantic pieces and my New York Times pieces, I had also, so I had all those to build on with the New York Times when Gift of Failure came out. They also had examples to see of my work. I also knew, for example, that I wanted to read my own audiobook, but they're not going to let me do that with no experience. So I started writing for Vermont Public Radio and doing these short commentaries. And the producer at Vermont Public Radio, Betty Smith, essentially did my training in radio. And that gave me the chops I needed so that by the time the audiobook was, they were ready to cast the audiobook, I said, can you give me a shot? And they gave me a shot and I got to read the audiobook. So all of this is, okay, 2 years from now, I want to be in a position to do X. How do I get the training, exposure, platform, whatever, to get to that place now?
Well,
starting
and
now.
Since the focus of this show is how to build a business with the book, what's so interesting to me about you as a sort of different guest is that you built a business around writing, which is not common, listener.
Well, and honestly, when COVID hit, I realized just how, yes, I have money coming in from my writing. I still freelance. I write book reviews for an outfit called Airmail. I write for the Washington Post periodically still. But speaking was the career I really knew I wanted to have. I love it's teaching, but on a really big stage. I love it. And that, you know, sort of disappeared with COVID. And suddenly I realized I was making about 70% of my income from speaking and about 30% from my writing. So yes, the writing was very much, I love the writing. I will always be a writer. It's my favorite thing to do. But the speaking is the ancillary career that I knew I wanted out of that as well. And by speaking, I mean, yes, the media hits and stuff like that. But mostly, I mean, being invited to come and do educating of some sort to an audience around education or parenting or recovery or substance abuse prevention, whatever that topic is. And that took a whole other, that's a whole other. I talked with Dan Blank on his podcast, mm-hmm. The Creative Shift, about planning to have a speaking career well before my first book ever came out. Like actively, I personalized 2,000 letters to heads of schools, principals, superintendents with a short excerpt from the book saying, this book is going to be coming out a year and a half from now. And wouldn't this be a great book for you to use as a community read so that all your teachers and your parents are reading it? And then I could come in and speak, and here's what those speeches could look like. I could talk to your students and do professional development for your teachers and do a talk in the evening. And by the way, did you know that your professional development budget could pay for part of it and your parent association budget could pay for part of it? You know, understanding how to get there was a big part of making that happen. So by the time Gift of Failure came out, I subsidized my own book tour because I had booked all of these talks based on the outreach I did in the 2 years before the book ever came out. And a lot of that is sitting there while my family is watching a movie one night, addressing envelopes or writing thank you notes or whatever. So having a real vision for what I want, not tomorrow, but 2 years from now, sort of has been the tactic that has worked for me, the angle that has worked for me.
That is spectacular because when I listened to your episode of Am Writing on, I don't know how many you've done on self-promotion, but the most recent one. And,
yeah.
And there are so many writers out there, because I used to be one of them, who are just like, okay, I'm going to put my book out there. And what's so amazing is I'm going to get speaking gigs and I'm going to get on the Today Show. And they don't understand not only that this is a very proactive part of it, but that it's half of it.
Yeah. And I think the other thing is, our podcast, hashtag Am Writing, has three hosts. There's me, there's KJ Delantonia, who just her novel, The Chicken Sisters, was one of Reese Witherspoon's picks for her book club. Okay. That's lightning. You know, you can't, you know, the lightning that happened for me was Kristen Bell featured my book on Instagram and said, everyone needs to go buy this book. Like I could nudge that into happening. Yes, I sent her books over a period of 2 years, but those things just, you know, that's lightning. You can't make that happen. But so there's KJ and then there's Serena Bowen. And Serena Bowen's story is really cool because Serena Bowen wrote under another name first and had a failure of a novel. Like it just didn't sell. It went nowhere. So she knew that in order to be able to write more books, she was going to have to come up with a pseudonym and write something that did work. And so out of that, she has created an empire where now not only has she written 30-odd romance novels and has hit the USA Today bestseller list with most of the ones she's done over the past 5 years and won a bunch of awards, she now has created a situation where other authors are going to write within her character and place universe, and she'll be publishing those books. And that's her gift for, she does not want to speak. Like she has no interest in going out and speaking, but very little. But what she's really good at is building her network with bloggers, book influencers, you know, who are the other people, book, you know, the bookstagrammer, book influencer people is you know, how do you build that community and those relationships over a period of time so that you have each other's backs when your new book comes out and you have reviewers in your place and you have these people who made, these people make gorgeous Instagram. If you go to Serena Bowen's Instagram feed, people make the most amazing Instagram posts for her because they love her work and they love her characters and they love her and they love the universe that she's built. So all three of us have done this, but in very different ways, because KJ didn't want to go out on the road and speak, but she also published a nonfiction book that would could have benefited from her doing that. So she had to figure out how to do it as an introvert who does not want to get up on stage and do anything. So it's been really interesting to watch, you know, to follow. We do a lot on self-promotion because we have to, because we're all doing it in very different ways.
God, the three of you are spectacular. Nobody makes me feel lazy. And
But when we first became friends, Serena's first book hadn't come out, the one that didn't do well. KJ had written a book for like reading to toddlers and tweens or toddlers and whatever. And I hadn't written anything. So, you know, the three of us have sort of come up together over the past 10 years in our careers. And that's been also really fun.
Now, what you said too, you know, oh yes, Kristen Bell, it was lightning in a bottle. Of course, you know, I had been sending her books for the last, like people don't know that. That is not really lightning in a bottle. It is.
Yeah.
But you took the action for, you know, luck comes to the prepared, mm-hmm. they say.
Yeah. Well, and I've been in enough green rooms where they keep the big box of here, take any books you want because we're not going to read these. And so, you know, so for example, like, yes, I can find out through the internet who Kristen Bell's manager, publicist, whoever is, but sending those books to those people, the only way she's going to pick up my book is if it's interesting to her. And, or really the deal is the person who's opening the box to see if it's a book she might be interested in, that you know who that person might be and you appeal to them. So I can't just, you know, say, hey, Kristen Bell, I want you to read my book here. Like right now, what I would love more than anything right now, based on what's been happening in social media, what's been happening out there is, you know, Chrissy Teigen has decided to get sober because of Holly Whitaker's book, Quit Like a Woman. She got that book because her doctor put it in her hands, a trusted source put it in her hands. That's how book word of mouth happens. And then people are, you know, selling Holly Whitaker's book is selling out because people love Chrissy Teigen and now they trust her. You know, Kristen Bell as a mom, people trusted her judgment. And so Gift of Failure sold like hotcakes when she recommended it. But you have to think about the channels that you're getting the book to the person who is likely to open that package and how do I get that person to think that maybe this might be something that they want to read, you know, and of course, after the Kristen Bell thing happened, I had been working since the very first episode of Dax Shepard's Armchair Expert to get on that show. And that took almost 2 years also. And that was with the fact that Kristen Bell liked my book. I had been sending notes and I'd been sending books and I'd been coming at it from all different angles. And it took 2 years until I hit the right combination of whatever to get on his podcast, to get on Dax's podcast. So it's, you can't know what's going to work. I've sent so many books to people that probably never saw them and they ended up in those boxes in the green room. And that's fine. That's an investment in the one that does make it into the hands of the person who liked it. And sometimes it'll make it into the right hands and that person will not say a word about it ever, but they'll give it to their friends. And that was interesting too, when I found out that some of those were making it into the right hands and it was being, and someone actually said, I was on the set of this blah, blah, blah. And I overheard the star of this show talking about your book to two other people on the set. And that's hand selling. Someone, that person is hand selling a book for me. And I respect and appreciate every single hand sell that happens of my book, no matter who it comes from. So, you know, my big question now is if Chrissy Teigen is getting her sobriety in hand, you know, she has kids. How do I get this new book that's about, you know, preventing that in your kids, given that you may or may not have, you know, a genetic predisposition, you know, how do I get that book in her hands? Well, that becomes a bit of an odyssey for me and it becomes a treasure hunt and it becomes a, you know, I'm probably going to send a lot of books to a lot of people and they will not end up in her hands, but that's okay. I like that. I like the challenge.
God, we are so different. I will put myself out there in certain ways, but if I send one thing and it gets rejected, I just take it so hard. When the truth is, the person didn't even see it like that.
Yeah.
Just gumption that you were born with.
Well, and here's the big thing I learned from Gift of Failure is you got to keep track also, which is worse because then I can see all the people who, like, I'm the kind of person that I turned off the notifications on my email listserv because I didn't want to know that people were unsubscribing because that was just like one unsubscribe. I was like, oh, they hate me. But I do have to keep track of where I'm sending books and when I sent it and that kind of thing. Because the last thing you want to do is end up in a situation where you didn't even know you sent a book and then you send two and you know, all that sort of stuff. But it is hard to, I think my skin's gotten thicker, honestly. I'm still, when I get attacked online, when people do ad hominem attacks against me or my work, that still really sucks. But I stopped reading the comments a long time ago. I really had a lot of mentors who said the thing you're going to have to do is just not give in to your narcissism. Do not look at the comments. Don't read the comments. And that's really hard. That's really hard to have Google alerts on your name, or if you do have someone else look at them first, because there's going to be stuff in there you're not going to want to see. And I think David Sedaris probably has it right on this one. He doesn't ever Google himself. He doesn't have he doesn't have any social media presence. And so there's some balance to be struck between those two places.
Yeah, it's interesting that when I published A Modern Love, not knowing what that was, an agent sold it mm-hmm. for me. And, somebody set up a website to ask who I was sleeping with at the New York Times that such a horrible piece could be published as a
nice.
Love. And I was brand new. My first book hadn't come out. I didn't know anything. And I remember being away for the weekend and sobbing all weekend. And then having the epiphany, it's like, you really do know you've done something notable when you got haters, when you got people who hate you that passionately.
Yeah. And Modern Love, people feel proprietary about the column. People feel proprietary about the content. People feel very strong things about, you know, what ends up there, because, you know, Dan Jones is editor, edits Modern Love. He gets so many submissions and he gets to see what happens in the comments. And so actually he's a great person to talk to about having a thick skin, because he gets attacked and the people whose stuff he publishes gets attacked. And it's just part of being out in the discourse. And, you know, I've been very, very fortunate. I've had relative to other people in the media, especially women in the media, I've had fewer attacks than most. But the attacks that I've had have been vicious, like scary, vicious, you know, up some security kind of vicious. So, and my husband is involved in, you know, vaccine distribution of the COVID vaccine right now, he's on the front lines of healthcare, and he got attacked recently. I had to go into town and pull down posters that had my husband's name on them saying he was a paid shill, a paid liar is what they said. And, I had to go pull down signs posted to lamp posts at intersections that said my husband was a paid liar for the pharmaceutical industry. So, you know, and he's a doctor who's trying to get people well and trying to spread the word about mask wearing and hand washing and getting the vaccine. And so, you know, if he can handle that, I can handle some people yelling at me for something I wrote about. So,
yeah, people you'll never see.
Yeah.
Because they're in their parents' basements, potentially.
That's true. Yeah.
And also newsletter. You have a paid newsletter. That's also part of the business. Yes.
Only for our podcast. Mm-hmm. So we interviewed Liz Lentz, who I love on, she's a fantastic Twitter follow, by the way. And she came on the show to talk about using Substack as a way to build a paid sort of, here's my email, here's my thing that's free to everyone, but then there's this extra content. So I subscribed to Liz, and she said, you know, there are some months where her paid readers make the difference in whether or not she can pay rent. And KJ and I, when we started the podcast, just the two of us, we knew that this was something, a labor of love. We knew we'd be dumping a lot of money into it. We do have a producer, a friend that was someone we hired who had worked with us at New Hampshire Public Radio. She and I have both done stuff there. And he's been with us since the beginning. And about 2 years in, we figured we had put, just money-wise, not time-wise, money-wise, we'd put at least $10,000 each into this thing. So we thought about Patreon, we thought about, and we went, ended up with Substack. So now if you listen, you can listen to our podcast for free. If you want to subscribe and support us to the tune of $80 a year, you will get all kinds of bonus materials. You'll get these things called writer top five. So every week we write, like we do tech reviews, we do writer tech reviews. We do things like, you know, last week it was top five tips on recording your audiobook because I had just done that. And a bunch of other sort of things. And then we have a Facebook group that's for our podcast. And, you know, our subscribers now pay for our producer. And we also have some sponsors. And we were very, it took us a long time to take on sponsors because we joke about the fact that, you know, some podcast sponsors, you can tell the podcaster is just, you know, reciting some stuff and maybe they don't use the product. We wanted to make it really clear that these were people we trusted and believed in. And so now we make enough to each of us have a teensy tiny check at the end of the year. I'm talking like, yay, we can go out for dinner, the three of us, and go crazy and, you know, get an appetizer and a main course, you know, that kind of thing, not anything major, but it's paying for the podcast. And that's major for us because that was a lot of money we sunk in before it ever started to pay for itself.
Well, and I want this podcast to sponsor. So that's a goal. And I don't ever, there's nothing that I ever want to promote it on as a, mm-hmm. as a paid.
Yeah.
Person.
We pursued one of them. So Author Accelerator was our first one. And Jenny Nash was KJ's book coach for the Chicken Sisters, the book that was Reese's book club pick. And Author Accelerator, Jenny Nash, she's fantastic. Book coaches, when they know what they're doing, are unbelievable. They're sort of like really well-trained editors. They're just really, the right book coach can really make a difference. So we really believed in Author Accelerator, and she was our first sponsor. And then since then, the ones that we've picked, I mean, honestly, we just brought on The Great Courses Plus, because I've been a subscriber to The Great Courses for over a decade. I own a whole bunch of courses because as a teacher, I had to constantly learn about new stuff. And so now, you know, with Great Courses Plus, it's just fun because I, in the sponsor posts that I do for each episode, I talk about what I've been learning from, you know, and it's been a really nice partnership. And we've decided to, you know, not try to make a lot of money off of sponsors and keep it to the bare minimum so that we're paying for ourselves. And that's just about it. And that's where I think we're happiest.
Mm-hmm. Well, so as we move towards wrapping up, what do you want people to know about the new book? What is the primary message? What would you like readers of this podcast, most of whom are aspiring authors and a lot of people in recovery, because that's my audience.
Yeah. So the thing that I would love people to know is that this is a book that I love sort of cross genre books. So I'm a huge fan of nonfiction that incorporates memoir. Like there were a few great books this year I loved, like Why Fish Don't Exist by Lulu Miller, and the book Eels, books that are about researching something really deeply, but also that personal experience with the topic. And that's what this book was. There's way more memoir in this book than I expected there to be. There's also the people who agreed to be a part of this book. I have two people in particular, Brian and Georgia, both their real names, who are young adults who really went through the ringer with their own substance abuse. I mean, Georgia was a student of mine when she was 15 and ended up going all the way down into, she almost died. She lost a child. I mean, and she's now in recovery and working towards a master's degree and has worked in harm reduction. And, you know, these people that gave me these stories and gave me the privilege of talking about their stories and were so honest and wonderful with me. I wanted people to identify with in the stories. and to do the thing that I think I do well, which is to be a total research geek, read everything I can get my hands on, and then translate the research into something that someone who doesn't want to read research will understand and enjoy. Mm-hmm. So I got to find that level of, I'm a total dork and this just delights me to no end. Let me give you as much detail as possible. I will overwrite this thing three times over so that I have to remove 2/3 of the words before my editor is like, look, Jess, no one cares about how many barrels of beer there were in the hold of, you know, this ship when it came over from England. Get to the point. And between my own ability to carve away at my own work and my editor's ability to say, Jess, yeah, no one needs to know that much information about that thing, I somehow end up with this piece that's enjoyable, entertaining, funny, I hope. There's a lot of humor in this book, but at the same time is very rigorous when it comes to the research. I happen to be married to a physician and statistician, so he helps me do that as well. Very memoir, very evidence-based. Here's what we as parents and educators and mentors and coaches can do to prevent substance abuse in kids. Here's what's under our control. Here's what's not. Here's some good stories to sort of round out that information. That's what I want people to know about the book.
And listener, you can get the book, The Addiction Inoculation, read by the author, also obviously in print.
So much fun.
Yeah.
Getting to read your own book is super fun.
Yeah. I'm sitting in my book room. I have a studio in my house where mm-hmm. our clients record
so cool.
audiobooks. So cool. And so much more exhausting than the dream that you're picturing.
So much. The first day was like my recovery story plus some hard stuff about brain development and kids and like real cognitive development stuff. That day I came home after recording from 10 until 4. And I laid down on the bed and I passed out for like 2 hours. My brain was so tired. It's exhausting, but it's also just really exhilarating. And both times I've recorded audiobooks, I cried at the end. I got a little weepy at the very end because it's just such an intense experience.
I get a little weepy because I'm just so exhausted.
Yeah, it is tiring.
Well, thank you so, so much for doing this. If people want to find out more about you, where should they go?
JessicaLahey.com, and it's L-A-H-E-Y. And I'm over at Twitter a lot because as a profession, teachers are the largest users of Twitter. And so, you know, people talk about Twitter being kind of a cesspool of negativity, not when you follow like 11,000 teachers. It's not. It's actually a wonderful place to be. I'm over there at Jess Lahey. And so everything you could ever want is at my website as well. So there's a blog over there. There's all the stuff about all the books and all the fun stuff.
And you're a podcast listener. So go get hashtag am writing. You will love it.
Hashtag am writing. And it's now searchable over its home on Substack so that you can find all of those episodes on self-promotion, or you can find all of those episodes on audiobooks or whatever it is you want to find.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Jess. This is
You're so welcome. I love the work that you're doing. I love just that you've built this business out of the things that you find most interesting. I'm just always in awe of people who can do that. So rah, you.
At you, Mutual Admiration Society. Okay, bye guys. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for joining me this week on Launch Your Book with Anna David. For more info about the show, go to launchyourbookpod.com. Where you can get show notes and so much more. If you got anything out of this episode, I can't tell you how much I would appreciate a review. And don't forget, my company, Launchpad Publishing, is here to help you at any stage in your writing and publishing journey. Just go to launchpadpub.com for more, and be sure to tune in next week for next week's episode.